But we're going to get things started with Lori Kilmartin. Lori is a stand-up comedian and a writer for Conan O'Brien's late-night talk show, Conan. She's also the author of a new book called Dead People Suck, a guide for survivors of the dearly departed. Lori's book is an honest and irreverent guide to dealing with death and dying. It was inspired by the loss of her father. In March of 2014, Ron Kilmartin died in hospice of lung cancer. He was 82. Lori channeled her grief into a comedy special called 45 Jokes About My Dead Dad.
Knock, knock. Not my dad, he's dead. That's the first joke, guys. 44 more to go. And then we're all going to get the massage of a lifetime.
The special was stand-up only, and it was it had to be jokes that would survive, you know, a waitress interrupting a customer for a drink order or a check drop where people are, you know, figuring out how much to tip the waitster, waste stuff. I mean, I felt like it needed to be able to be like in a nightclub, you know, like regular stand-up. So that was my goal for that. So those jokes are sort of written in that way. And this is a little... I have a chance to just spread out a little bit and still tell jokes and be funny, but also give a little bit of backstory that probably would be boring in a nightclub. But when you're curled up with a book, it's kind of exactly what you need to know.
Yeah. So can you tell me a bit about your father? What was he like?
Oh, he was a funny guy. I think he may have had ADD because he had a like 3 to 5 how-to books on every subject in the world.
Wow.
And it looked like as we started going through them after he died, he read half of each one and then moved on.
Yeah, I know that
So he
feeling.
Was always like trying to learn stuff and then he'd move on to something else and get interested by something else. So I think he had that going on. He was an engineer, a civil engineer, and he worked all over the world when I was growing up. I guess he got really good at working overseas, which... you know, is a skill, but it's still your dad's gone.
Yeah.
So for me, in my 20s, he started working more at home in the States, and I actually lived at home from my from like 21 to 33 just to kind of be around him because I had missed about a decade with him. I was also a stand-up comic, so I needed their free rent.
Yeah. There you go, yeah.
But I liked sort of having the chance to bond with him that I didn't have when I was a teenager.
Yeah, of course, yeah. What kind of a relationship did you have with your dad? How would you describe it?
I had a really good relationship with my dad. I mean, we were poles apart politically. I'm super liberal. He was, you know, in the Tea Party.
Yeah.
And we just sort of didn't talk about that and talked about everything else. He was a dog lover and, you know, I had a son and my sister had two kids, so he was a grandfather. And he was a great guy. He was really one of the... not the last nice guys, but like a classic nice guy and a devout Catholic. And we would always make fun of him. And he put up with it. So, you know, he was great.
Yeah.
I really wish he was around for my son more than me, you know, just for my son to hang out with his cool grandpa.
Can you take me back to the day your dad died?
It was Sunday morning, March 2nd. And the night before, he'd had a really hard night, and that was as far as I could tell, I mean, my dad was not the type to tell you if he was in pain, but as far as I could tell, that was really the night that was really difficult for him in terms of breathing and getting, you know, just getting enough air. We had an oxygen machine that broke. We were doing home hospice, and the hospice people, it took way too long to come to help us. So my sister and I sort of... I got behind my dad and she was in front of him. She's a psychiatrist, but she does have a medical degree, but she hasn't done a lot of body stuff in a while.
Yeah.
But she was scooping stuff out of his mouth and I was kind of pounding his back a little bit to loosen it up. And we just sort of, we went back and forth and told him all the great things he did for us and how much fun he was and how many great memories we had of him while we were trying to help him breathe. You know, he sort of calmed down, or I don't know if the breathing, I guess the breathing got easier because then he needed to lay down and he fell asleep. And I was sort of on watch that night. And when I woke up on Sunday morning, his breaths were, you know, 15 seconds apart, then 20 seconds apart. And, I guess I should have known that was it, but I didn't. I just thought he was really relaxed. I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at one point, there was no new breath. And I was like, oh, dang it. It happened. You know, and that was 8:36 in the morning. And, you know, I woke up my sister, and she was able to call the time of death because of her degree. And, you know, woke up my mom and stuff. And that was that. And then we ended up, that was Sunday morning, and we ended up staying. We kept my dad's body that night because he looked so pink. And I just, we just couldn't call the mortuary to take him away. And I guess, of course, we couldn't believe he was dead.
Of course.
So we decided to watch the Oscars with my dad's body. And so we all, the three of us, got on his hospital bed. And, you know, he had cancer, so he died really skinny. So we all fit on it. And we watched the Oscars with him. And it was kind of this weird, wonderful night.
Yeah.
And the next morning...
Sorry to interrupt you, Lori. I'm just curious. Yeah. What was it like watching the In Memoriam segment with your father? That must have been especially kind of weird.
It was brutal. And Bette Midler was singing Wind Beneath My Wings in that particular Oscars. And it was brutal. I was, you know, we all just were sobbing, wailing wildly, but it was cathartic as well. And it was nice to know, you know, well, he's in good company this year. A lot of amazing people died along with my dad. And then on Monday morning, you know, he had gone from looking pink and just freshly alive to looking like a dead body. He looked like a corpse, and it didn't look like he was still in there. Uh-huh. I think on Sunday it looked like he might wake up, or he's, you know, his soul's still hanging out. Yeah. And then Monday it didn't, and it was a lot easier to call the mortuary to have them take his body away because it didn't look like he was in it anymore.
Yeah, you've done a remarkable job of taking a subject that is very sad and very universal, the death of a parent, and you've turned it into humor. How were you able to do that?
Well, that's one of my only skills. I'm pretty bad at everything else in life, but I'm pretty good at writing jokes. Part of me is like, you're not that good. You could still be better.
You're more than pretty good.
When my dad was dying, you know, I didn't want to do any stand-up shows because I didn't want to leave the house, because what if I missed him when he died? So I just started tweeting a bunch of jokes that I probably would have tried at just a show that night in the Bay Area. And that became sort of how I coped with it. You know, every time there was a new surreal, strange thing, my mom wouldn't stop cleaning. She kept, you know, she kept scrubbing things. It's like, you know, your husband's dying. The dishes can wait.
Yeah.
But they couldn't. I mean, we all had to do something. And, so I guess that sort of helped me get through it. And then I'm a stand-up, so that's what I do. To me, that's the most interesting stuff, is the stuff that happens in my real life, because it's not going to be like what every other stand-up talks about.
I think for
every stand-up, you always try to mind your own life. So that was what was happening in mine, so I just kind of went in with it.
Yeah, that's very well said, yeah. You live-tweeted your father's time in hospice and your grieving process after he died. Why did you want to do that?
I wasn't thinking of it as live tweeting it. I think that's how it ended up being described. But I mean, I always think whenever you're commenting on Twitter about something you're doing, it's live tweeting, right? I just didn't have, nothing else was interesting to me.
Look, dude, at the Verizon store. Don't ask how I'm doing today if you aren't prepared to hear. Good for someone who just buried her dad on Monday. Haven't cried in over 5 hours. Seems like I'm pretty much over it. Dad's spirit lives on in the dozens and dozens of loose AA batteries that still might be good.
Yeah, at one point you write, quote, "Maybe I'll change, but right now it feels like if you didn't know my dad, you'll never really know me," end quote. Do you still feel that way?
Kinda. I mean, here's the thing. Like, I didn't get married, so my dad never met a husband, right? And maybe I'll get married one day.
Sure you will.
But
if you want to.
But that person will never have met my dad. Because believe me, I've been through all my exes mentally. I'm like, no, I couldn't get back with that guy or that guy or that guy. So, you know, if I do get married, it will be a new guy. And he won't have known my dad. And, I maybe I'm overstating how deep I am. Maybe you can get to know me in one date. But it is a shame when you can't. You'll never be able to introduce, you know, that person to a new person.
Yeah.
And and they'll never, they won't get that little slice of your life. Like, my sister's been married for a long time, and I really envy the fact that she and her husband can talk about my dad and just have those shared memories. And when I do it, I'm going to jump start from the very start. Well, here's the way my dad was. Well, my sister's husband, Sean's like, yeah, I know. I know him. I walked the dogs with him all the time. So, yeah, I that bums me out a bit.
Yeah. What's the most important thing your future husband should know about Ron Kilmartin, about your dad?
Well, you know, my dad's he's very conservative. And I think myself and other liberals, you know, when you get on Twitter, it's like, you know, if you voted for this person, then you're dead to me because of XYZ.
Yeah.
And my dad was a really nice guy, you know?
Yeah.
And he couldn't have been characterized that way. And if someone does that, they were wrong. He just had different political beliefs, but he was the nicest guy, you know?
Yeah. That comes across in the book too. And just from talking to you, from listening to you. Yeah. In the acknowledgments, you write this very poignant message to your dad where you say, you can't wait to see him again. You have so much to tell him. If you don't mind my asking, do you think you will get to see him again?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just reading Wrinkle in Time to my kid.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I mean, gosh, that's the biggest question we're all asking ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Because if you know you're going to see your loved ones again and you know life goes on, that changes everything about how you live. But I don't want to just believe in something and live in a fantasy and miss out on things I'm supposed to be doing here because I'm not in the moment.
Oh, you know? That's the danger. Of believing,
yeah,
I was just going to say the danger of believing in an afterlife is that you deny yourself pleasure in reaching your goals because, oh, I'll have a second life in which to do it.
Right.
Yeah,
get a do-over.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I do believe that people that have the near-death experiences say they talk and they see their loved ones and stuff. And so maybe even if it's that those 5 minutes before I end, my consciousness ends, I get... Maybe my brain is going to flood me with memories to make it easier, or it's real. Those are real things. But I look forward to those few moments where I get to to see my dad again and talk. You know, I guess I'd love to hug my dad again, but you know, you can't do that if you're just a soul. But maybe it'll feel like a hug.
Yeah. What do you want readers to take away from reading your book?
Hopefully, you know, a couple laughs, and I hope it reminds you of someone that you love and that you lost, and it can remind you of things that you may have forgotten about them. You know, like I said earlier, like maybe my dad's idiosyncrasies aren't the same as your dead loved ones, but you know, you may have forgotten a few, and maybe this will just remind you of them and help paint a bigger picture of them in your mind, a fuller picture that you can remember with a smile on your face, you know?
Yeah, it certainly had that effect on me. And there are way more than a couple of laughs. There's like
a chock full of laughs.
It's very funny and also very, very poignant. I'm curious, has writing this book helped you miss your dad less, if that makes sense, or is spending so much time thinking or writing about him made you miss him more?
It helped me just understand that this is just my life now. We're a family of three now, you know, or myself, my sister, my mom, and I. And now that I've gone through all this, I mean, I had to go back and remember a lot of stuff when I was writing it. I made a lot of notes during hospice because I just couldn't believe this was happening. It was so strange.
Yeah.
So I did have to go, you know, wake up at 6 a.m. and dive back into that and cry and then write and then go to work and stuff. But now that it's done, I feel like I remember my dad in different ways now. And I was just up in San Francisco working at a comedy club, and I went to a few places that I had been with my dad, and it was nice, you know?
Yeah.
I just felt like I kept sort of, you know, tipping my hat to him and going, hey, I remember this. Thank you.
That's great. That's wonderful. Do you have a favorite of the 45 jokes about your dad that you've written? Is there one favorite you could share with us?
The one that I still tell in clubs is the one that sums up everything to me is I say it's...
It is tough to lose a parent. It's even tougher if you were hoping to lose the other parent first. my mom is a pistol. and that that's what you want to put in your mouth when she talks to you.
And I know that sounds mean, but my dad's last words to me were, ha ha, she's your problem now. And she, my mom lives with me, so he prophetically, she is my problem now.
Lori Kilmartin is a stand-up comedian and a writer for Conan. She's also the author of Dead People Suck, a guide for survivors of the newly departed. You can find out more about Lori on our website, WPR.org/beta. And we'd love to know what you think of the show. You can email us at beta@wpr.org.